Hey everybody, welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. I'm here to regret to inform you we're talking about the episode titled Mommy. Whether I like it or not, we're discussing Mommy. Also, shockingly, one of the more like on title episodes, there's a good amount of mom stuff going on. Gotta give it to him once every blue moon. This is the correct title for this episode probably, even though it sucks a lot and I wish they would have given it anything else.
Yeah, it's accurate, right? Kind of, yeah. It's like 8 out of 10, maybe.
I feel like that's like a really... That is really the bar is in hell as far as like standards go, because you get to name the episode after you've already recorded it. So it's not like they're given a title and then they have to make their episode around it. It's like the bare minimum.
It's not like they have to like guess what the episode's gonna be titled, and then they're shown the episode and they're like, damn, I wasn't close. I just guessed Halloween because there's one of those every season, you know.
And you know, to be fair too, it's not even anything clever. It's like there's stuff about mothers and kids in it, so Mommy, boom, done. You know what I mean? It's like you're in, you're out, bam, American Horror Story. But
yeah, there's roughly like three mom subplots in this episode, and they thought
I just remembered one of them again. This sucks. I just remembered the vaccine mom subplot. Yeah. God, I hate. You made me feel bad, so it's like maybe partially you're culpable. We'll get there. We're here to talk about episode 3, Mommy of Hotel. Starting us off, it is Tristan getting out of the elevator, who is the model played by what's his name? Dandy.
Fenwick Rock?
Yeah. But yeah, runs up into his room and is just kind of running around being like, hey, are you here? Hey, I want to talk to you. Hey, it was like weird last time, but I'm horny for killing now. I get it. I'm into your shit now.
Yeah.
And also I looked up your birthday and some other like vaguely vague information about you.
He starts it on like the Wikipedia. Yeah.
Yeah. I regret to inform that this whole sequence did make me chuckle in earnest, and not just because it's like American Horror Story bad. So like Tristan wanders into the room and like he is super excited to talk to James March's ghost or James March, etc. And he starts like rattling off all this stuff that he's read about James March. And then James March finally appears and he's like, hey, how do you know so much about me? And Tristan responds with, I Googled you. And then Marge like kind of clutches his pearls and he goes, that sounds obscene. And that did make me giggle, because the next thing that happens also
bit. Not me.
Is,
nah, you both have really low standards. I'm sorry. Get the hell out of here. Stupid joke. Fuck that guy.
I like old timey guys being stupid. I think that it's, I'm an easy mark for that.
It's fair.
You show me a Rat Pack guy being like, do I look like I know what a tap card is? Like, I'll take it.
No, that's fair. Like, I'm really not gonna give anybody shit for laughing at a joke or whatever. I think for me, it was like, watching this, I remember this joke sincerely, and it came across to me like a little try hard on the writer's side, like, we know the internet, and it's just like, it's 2015, like, you know, get the hell out of here, but sure, you know.
The next part, oh, go ahead.
I think I'm about to say exactly what you were going to say, which is, the next part, I think, is what made it, like, made me actually, like, genuinely chortle,
this one's,
is because he follows it up. They double down on it because Tristan's like, I've decided that killing is awesome, actually. High five. And James just like looks at his hand like, what are you doing?
Like, James is like into it. James is like, great. I'm so glad to hear that you're into it. I'm going to go get a sack of oranges. And then like Tristan's like, high five, buddy. And like the thing that's funny to me about this is a lot of people don't realize the high five is a like shockingly modern invention. It was like the late 70s. So like this guy would just not know what a high five, he's never seen one before, so he just held his hand up and he's like, I guess.
He's like, you're weird, I like you. He's super excited about it. I don't know. I just thought it was a very funny, silly, endearing thing. And to me, I actually weirdly read the opposite of that the writers are trying too hard. I actually thought that maybe Evan Peters had ad-libbed that whole section because that seemed too out of character for the American Horror Story writers to write an actual joke instead of just being like, we made this character say a slur. Isn't that funny?
Okay.
Which is what their usual MO is.
Not a bad point. But so then this part was weird too then, because Jane's like, are you familiar with my black closet? And it's like, what's that? And it's like, it's a really lazy Iron Maiden in that it's like a closet, but with like a one big spike.
You can only kill someone via intimidation with this trap. Like, it's like real like Tecmo's deception shit, where it's just a door with a big ass spike behind it. But like, if they are looking forward when they open the door, they'll just be like, "Oh, there's a big old spike there. I'm not gonna run into that." Or the other conceit is that it's so dark they don't, you know, notice the spike. The problem then being, how would they see the door, James? If it's a black door in a dark room, they're just going to run into the door, James.
Yeah, it's really funny because Slow Beef described this as a very lazy Iron Maiden. I would argue it's the opposite because, like, if you think about it practically, first of all, this implies that someone is backing into this room. They have to be backing into this room for this to work.
Yeah, you know,
so, like, that's the first thing. Then the second thing is they would, like, bump into that little, like, point and be like, oof, ouch, owie, and then not back up anymore. It would require someone to, like, run in and then, like, shove them super hard in order for them to get impaled.
Or, like, you have to build, like, a little step, like, into a shower so that you fall over backwards if you're backing into it.
Yeah.
It's, like exercise where you, like, really have to push them onto it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like a weighted jump rope, but for killing, you know? Like, it's not just the regular thing. You got to work a little at it. Yeah, okay.
The part that really gets me is just that, like, they can't have seen it first, because that's why it's behind a door and why it's like a closet and it's a trap, because they can't have seen it. But to make it work, the door needs to be open. So you need to be pushing them back into it, but also you need to be on the other side of them from the door, yes, to get them facing you and backing up into it. When do you open the door? When do you open the door?
I think in the flashback, in which they show it happening, they're like, oh, the door's just like kind of cracked open.
Which is so funny. If March hadn't killed that architect for no reason, they probably could have pointed that out to him. I think of it, but you know.
It's either that or this is just crazy bonus points in Tecmo Deception, because this is like the most asinine setup. Like, you're gonna be like, the only way you're getting more is if you like tar and feather him before you chuck him in the closet.
Some achievement pops called like, that worked? You know, like,
yeah, wow, one big spike, huh?
0.1% of people have gotten it. Sorry.
It's like one of those really rare executions that you can do in Friday the 13th, the video game, if you get Jason and one of the victims at like a really specific point of the map, except for it's almost impossible to make work because everyone can just see the spot and won't go there. Also, it turns out the reason why most impaling and spike trap things are on the ground or in a hole is because it requires like a pretty significant amount of force to drive that big of a spike through a human body, especially if like you have control of the body as the person who has the body, because if you, like I said, if you bump into a sharp thing, you're going to be like, ouch, and then just not do that anymore. Ideally.
Yeah. Whereas turning potential energy into kinetic energy via the magic of gravity makes it quite easy to simply shove someone off a ledge and then their body weight just pulls them onto the spike. So like, you know, bada bing, bada boom, as opposed to, yeah, kind of like, it's like pushing someone into a fence the wrong way. I don't really see how this would shake out at all.
And it would, like, if we did give them the benefit of the doubt, they're like, oh, yeah, like, after they got, because they go in the dark room. It's a black and white flashback. When he gets into the closet, when the victim gets into the closet, like, James March follows him in. So, like, I think the implication is that he, like, shoved him. But, like, James March slash Evan Peters is not, like, a big guy.
He's a little guy.
Yeah.
He's a little guy.
But the guy who gets impaled is a big guy. So I'm like, this doesn't work if the person who you're trying to impale cares even a little bit that you're trying to impale them, because they will simply just be like, no, you're not pushing me onto the big spike.
Just put your hands on the left and right wall, brace your feet against the ground, and do not be moved by the little guy. It's easy.
Or just sidestep. It's literally one spike. It's not even like a bunch of spikes in the room like it is in Iron Maiden. It's just one. It is a closet that has one really big spike coming out of the middle of the back wall. Which, again, what if he like slipped and then kind of went to the side? Now you've just kind of like scraped him. You scraped his ribs.
Yeah, what if he did the natural reaction to being a big man in a hallway and did the big man shimmy and just turned sideways and just, swoosed right past that spike? What then?
I bet you anything James March, like, after that, this thing was built, saw a picture of an Iron Maiden or something, and was like, shit, that's better.
Yeah, you that's know, way like, better than my thing.
I should have just, stupid, but...
Too bad I'm dead now and I can't make any improvements to this hotel or something, I guess. I guess I don't have any physical control over the hotel anymore for some reason.
They're never clear on that. Yeah.
No, anyway, yeah. Sorry, there's a lot of things that the quote-unquote ghosts, I guess, for lack of a better word, that live in the hotel, like what they are and are not allowed to do. There's too many rules.
We'll learn later, too, that they do follow the regular American Horror Story ghost rules. Like, anyone in, like, the ghosts of the hotel are people who died in the hotel, much like the murder house and the asylum? I forget, but whatever, you know, the same deal.
Or on, like, or on the property, because I think Sally died in the alley, which I guess counts, I suppose.
That's fair, yeah. Yeah. I'll give it to her.
because sometimes I was thinking about this while I was watching the episode too, and they were talking about there will be something that happens later in the episode where two characters will be talking about dying in the hotel and becoming a ghost, and I had the thought about it, thinking about all the ghost rules that they've implied in other seasons and how stupid they are, and I had the thought of, like, well, what about Donovan? Because, like, he, for all intents and purposes, like, died, but then he was, like, kind of brought back by Lady Gaga. So did he become a ghost?
Oh, you mean do the vampires count? I feel like there's a time period, like a buffer that has to happen before you can go ghost mode, and in that period you can go vampire. That's... You know.
Oh no! This is now
going
we're at
ghost
time.
Mode. You can only go ghost mode if you get sewn into a mattress. I think what it is. Do you need to incubate? Is that like a thing, or is that to become a dildo demon? I've lost track.
Let me put it in fight game terms. Okay, imagine you get a kill confirm. Right, you have to do the vampire hit to continue the combo, like right away. Otherwise, it drops and you become a ghost.
Okay, so yeah, you just have like a very short time to go vampire mode. So it's like it's like pickling a vegetable.
Yeah.
You
yes.
have like a short period of time before it just becomes a rotten vegetable.
Yes, there you go.
I was thinking it was more of like a Pokemon situation where there are like certain Pokemon that you, depending on whether you evolve them during the day or at night, you'll get a different evolution. I thought maybe that's the rules that they were playing by.
I'm glad we've covered so many audience segments with the metaphors. You know what I mean? Like, there's everybody be like, I think I understand now how the vampire.
Bro, I love demographic coverage. You know that about me. One of the most normal human things I say to my friend Slobeef all the time, bro, I love covering demographics on a day.
Just, did we get all the segments? My question at the end of every session.
Did you know your podcast is number one for horror in Argentina? Like, I guess, man.
I hope so. I hope so. I only hope.
So, yeah, there... They're starting to like make murder plans together. Immediately James is just like, okay, great, buddy, let's do a little murder. I've got a guy I'd like to get murdered. What do you think about this? And then Claudia, Will, and Lachlan come in. And Will is the fancy fella who is buying the entire hotel, I believe.
Or
yes,
has bought them. Lachlan. I think he owns it at this point.
He owns it at this point. Okay, yeah. And they walk in and Tristan's just hanging out alone because he was talking to a ghost who I guess has decided to only manifest for Tristan. We can't go into this every time. So he's not there and they're just kind of like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, I was just visiting a friend, which is like, you know, weird thing to say in an empty hotel room. But then, yeah, Will immediately escalates to like, you're a squatter, which like that's a word with a very specific meaning. That's not like you can't just call someone like a squatter like that. That means they're invoking squatters' rights. They're like trying to live in the property.
I live in this room. Like you can't kick me out, which is not even close to what Tristan said. Also, like, I think that maybe this is a case of they have conflated trespassing and squatting. Which it's like it's one of those like a square rectangle situation where like every square is a rectangle, not every rectangle is a square. Like I'm sure some trespassers are squatters, but not every trespasser is a squatter. But like the whole interaction is very strange because Tristan answers like something fairly normal because they're like, "Hey, why are you in here? I was told no one was on this floor," and then he's like, "Oh, I was visiting a friend," which like. Just because the friend isn't there doesn't mean they didn't, like, step out or they're not in the bathroom or something. And, like, maybe those two just found a quiet place to, like, interact or something.
He's like, implied nasty here. I don't know what it is. Like, they just assume, like, you, the viewer, and everyone in the scene gets a nasty aura off Tristan and just, like, hates and distrusts him implicitly. Because it's weird. It's bizarre. Like, everyone's just like, that guy's fucked up and evil. And all he did was he was like, oh, yeah, sorry, I should go.
Yeah, like, I'm in a room you didn't expect me to be in or whatever. Like, the other thing is... I guess they're trying to lean on the fact that the last time these two had an interaction, it was him kind of getting fired from the show, but he quit instead. The fashion show that he put like a big, awful bravado on and kind of like did a really bad job. Like that was Will's show. So like we're supposed to, I guess, infer from the fact that they're not on like good terms that would implicitly make Will not trust him, but like later they're gonna have a conversation that's like, oh no, these two guys have like known each other for like a really, really long time and have like a history. So it would be really weird for Will to be so like blatantly distrusting of Tristan. Tristan, for what it's worth, does not look like a trustworthy man. He has like a mullet hawk that has like red feathers sewn into it. It's insane.
For sure. Like, there's definitely a certain air of, like, mischief minimum, but, like, not the level of just, like, you're a squatter. I'm going to kill you. Get out of my house. Like, which is kind of where he takes it. He also, so Will, like, lunges in and touches Tristan's face and says, like, oh, what happened to your cut? Which is a wild observation and also one that he's, like, really insistent on but does, like, no real follow-up.
He will keep mentioning it, though. He will keep mentioning it over and over again. But, like, once Tristan doesn't answer, he does not press any further. He just keeps dropping it, like, eventually he's going to tell me.
It is a mystery.
Yeah.
We'll never know. We'll simply never know. And yeah, then regrettably, there is a line that did massive psychic damage to me as well, where Will is, you know, touching Tristan's face and being like, what happened to your cut? I'm pretty sure you were cut. Also, I'm pretty sure you looked like you were doing like meth a couple days ago and now your skin's like fine. What's going on there? And Tristan just like, pause off. You don't need to touch my face. And he says something like vaguely like, sexual.
I think he just says pause off. He literally just says pause off. I think it's just like a really nothing throwaway line. That's not the thing that shot me directly with the bullet.
No, it's not. I just thought there was more lead into what the kid says. I swore there was more because otherwise it's just like truly so unneeded and unnecessary and unearned, which is Lachlan apparently is watching this like vaguely homoerotic moment with his father in the background and leans out and goes, "Owned, Dad!" Which
he says it like snidely. He's like, "Owned, Dad." You know, where it's like, wow, all right.
Yeah. Like, I promise you, I can feel it so deep in my bones, deep in my soul, like deeply, deeply I feel this to be true. There is a version of this on the cutting room floor where he says pwned instead of owned. I guarantee. I can feel it so deeply inside my soul.
I think that's too much for them. I don't think they know enough about like anything, to be honest with you, to handle it, but I wouldn't.
Counterpoint, Slow Beef. In roughly 10 minutes, they're going to have a 7-year-old girl say, "It's such a cool room. They get to play Nintendo," which is nothing a real 10-year-old or 7-year-old has ever said in their entire life.
That's fair. That's fair. But yeah. Oh,
I wish there was a like sponsored version where they said you got pizzoned and it was a tie-in with the pizzone and they were bringing the pizzone back. Now we're getting some
crazy calzone.
Yeah, so yeah. Oh, hell yeah, brother. And yeah, so tells Tristan to leave. Tristan like doesn't like emphatically just does not leave. They leave, like they not being Tristan. And then James March and the maid Miss Evers like pop in and basically realize that, oh, this guy bought the place. He says like, oh, we need to tear this whole floor out. And James March, you know, the ghost of the owner, is like, oh, well, that won't do. We're going to have to get rid of this guy. What am I? Oh, if only there was some way I could kill guys in my murder hotel. And then Tristan's like, no planning from you, you sweet old weirdo. This one's on me.
Yeah, that was also so weird to me in that scene is that James March is like, oh, well, what am I going to do? This, first of all, Will says he's going to tear the floor out, which like, what? He doesn't mean like tear the carpeting up. He means like he wants to like level the floor and redo everything, because he talks about like the doors and the walls and stuff when they're walking up, which is weird. Why only this floor? The whole hotel is like this.
Also, redoing a floor plan in that way is like ludicrously expensive for almost no gain. There's no way.
Also, like, why? He owns the hotel, so like, whatever. Yeah, and then for James March to
the
be like...
The problem isn't, like, the layouts of the rooms. Like, they're perfectly cromulent rooms. They just need to be cleaned and updated.
Yeah, they're old. They're very, like, dated. But, like, James March being like, oh, no, what am I going to do? He's gonna... This is my floor. This is where my room is. Like, dude, we watched you shoot a woman point blank in the head last episode. Like, you can still kill people. I reckon you've got a whole run of the whole hotel. Like, he sleeps like, here. He lives here. You could kill him in his sleep if you wanted to.
He did serial killings and then, like, had to kill himself because he realized he had lost. He had his, like, Kira moment. And then he just, like, got back up and was like, I guess consequences aren't real. And so, like, instead of just doubling down on that, which seems to be his normal behavior, where he's just like, give me a lady in here. I feel like killing. And then now he's just like, oh, no, what am I going to do? It's like, you're, like, murder incarnate right now. Someone addresses you as the greatest serial killer that ever lived. And you, like, still exist, so you clearly get away with it.
Yeah, and you can't go to jail now. Like, you're, like, the ultimate version of a serial killer. Yeah. People come into you.
They take you out. You just poof back in.
And you get to hang out in the place you designed specifically to serial kill people in. Like, you got, like, the S-plus tier ending, truly.
That's, like, literally, like, what Destiny 2 gods do is they make a little throne dimension they spawn in. Yeah, like, that's what he has.
Oh no, he's gonna change the wallpaper in my murder room.
God.
The opening sequence plays. Now it's time for in this episode, the worst scene.
Can I, by the way, just a quick thing. I always feel a little self-conscious about my exasperated that I do on this podcast, but I realize like everyone does it because this show is so exhausting. You know what I mean?
Like, when I do it, it's because I remember, like, the show. My brain recalls a scene from the show, and that, in essence, is, like, watching it again, which is exhausting.
My brain, Yeah, no, totally. My brain speechwriter kind of just gives up. Where it's like, I can't try to describe this anymore. I'm out of here, you know. But like, anyway, sorry. But you had the opening sequence.
If it was a more poetic show, I would say words fail me. But I think in this case, words have stopped giving a shit.
Yeah,
it's more accurate.
There you go.
Yeah, when we do this podcast, it's less like a discussion of a media. Example, and more so like we're having to tell somebody, it's like we're having to call our insurance company and tell them that we backed into someone in the parking lot. Like, it's akin to that kind of relay of information, not the relay of the discussion of the deep poetic meanings of a piece of media that we enjoyed. Speaking of metaphor.
But yeah, so Tristan says, I'm going to get it. And then we move on through the opening sequence to what I will ardently agree with, Liz, is the worst
sequence. It's a whole sequence, yeah. Mm-hmm.
At least. Yeah, like it's like a lot.
Yeah.
It is. Yep. It's like 10 minutes. It goes on for like 10 minutes, which is only a 50-minute long episode. So that's like 20% of the runtime.
About Vaccine Mom? Why do we need this side character? Like, not to be rude to this actress. She does a fantastic job. But like, why do we need this character in this show is really what I want to know. Like, the cop already felt fucking ancillary, and now we've got the cops soon to be not wife spoilers. Like, what's the point?
I mean, unless he gets real sad, that almost worked. So this whole sequence is gonna be Alex, who's John's wife, the doctor who does house calls to only kids who are vaccinated, except for we've only ever seen her go to unvaccinated children's homes for some reason. A very confusing set of morals for this character, for her to immediately go against. But she's at the Measles Kids house again. She was there last episode, too. And this whole 10-minute sequence is done explicitly through voiceover, which I hate.
So, yeah, and I think it's okay to reveal, too, like, what's ultimately happening is that she's relaying this to, like, a therapist, and we can go into, like, the why of that in a bit, but, like, so it's, like, that kind of thing where they're doing, like, she's relaying it to us, the audience, and then when it's her turn to actually tell the therapist or whoever about it, she, like, doesn't, you know? So we're going to learn her whole backstory. That sounds way more clever, I think, that description, than what they actually do, which is more annoying.
Yeah, because when it gets to the end of it, like Chloe just said, it's what it's going to reveal is like they're in a therapy session and like she didn't say any of the stuff that we're about to hear out loud. It's all like in her head, because the therapist is like, you haven't said anything all session. And I'm like, so the implication is that she did, which granted I'm guilty of this, so I can't really say this doesn't happen, but she was like rehearsing what she would say to the therapist if she was sharing, I guess, before doing it.
I'll make this scene a million times better, I think. If this was grief counseling for losing the son, like at a group therapy kind of thing, she thinks this whole thing and then's like, I don't want to share it today or whatever. Then it's like, okay, that's clever. I get it. All right. You know, that's like something you're doing here. But we'll get there. This is more of a place where it's like, no, you're in a therapy session for something specific and a specific person that maybe you care for and, you know,
The thing I think we're burying the lead on a little bit is the flashback.
Yeah.
Sucks a fat one. Royally. It's like no good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so, that's the part we're really like missing here. Is it starts with her being like, first of all, she runs in and there's the measles kid having measles. And she talks to the mom and is like, hey, we're going to need to get him to a hospital because he has measles so bad because you didn't vaccinate him. Why didn't you call me and let me know he had measles so bad? His temperature's at 103, which is like, that's pretty bad. It's pretty bad.
Past 103. Yeah.
And so her response is, well, I felt bad because you told me about vaccination, which like, wow, what a wrong message to even like consider sending out. Like, you fucking unthinking morons, you stupid pieces of shit. I hope you feel good about who you aligned yourselves with, you fucking wads. And yeah, so this whole thing of, oh, I didn't tell you because I felt bad. You shouldn't have been so mean to me, the anti-vaxxer. No, fuck that. Fuck it. it. That kid is sick because of you. It's your fault. Sorry. Just need to be clear on this one, where I stand on this one.
It's a garbage thing.
Yeah, it's a really bad little thing they felt the need to write in, and I don't really know why.
I think it was an error because, I think they're very clearly like, this was a mistake for this mom to do it, especially with other events that have happened and may happen. But, like, you're absolutely right that the message they're sending is just sort of like, don't be mean to people or they might make the wrong decisions here. And it's like, you got to tell, no, she was right to tell her, like, hey, you fucked up. You should, you know what I mean? Now you have to take this seriously. Yeah. And instead she's like, I don't know. I just felt weird about calling you. And it's like, then you call another fucking doctor, you idiot. You know, like, your kid's, even like, have her, fucking...
They could have doubled down and even had the anti-vax mom, like, say something extra stupid. Like, oh, well, I thought it would just go away on its own or something. Or, like, I gave him, like, homeopathic medicine or something. I gave him horse dewormer.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, and 103, is a really bad fever. I mean, especially for a kid. But, like, whatever. This is a terrible mom. Well, I guess stupid mom or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, like, so... So then we get her.
So as they're putting this kid onto the sled and running him out of the building, she starts thinking to herself, and you know why I became a doctor that does house calls explicitly to vaccinated children, but I only show up to non-vaccinated children's houses? That's right, because I had a bad childhood, and I wanted other people to have less bad of a childhood, I think.
Yeah, nebulous bad childhood. Because, she doesn't, like, say what it was. She's just like, oh, stinky.
So my theory on this is they originally had it written as she decided to become like a child, like a pediatrician, because her son got kidnapped. But then they realized the timeline for that would be fucking insane. And that would mean she would like finish medical school in like 6 months, which is not a thing a person can do. So they were like, oh, it was because she had a bad childhood, I think. And then she's like, I started taking it really seriously when my son got kidnapped. It's like, oh, okay.
I barely cured these kids before. It's like, here's a lollipop. Yeah. Get out of here. Whatever. You know, now.
Yeah, do you want the SpongeBob bandage or the Dora the Explorer bandage? Get the fuck out of my office.
Oh, you don't want to vaccinate? Oh, well, get out of here, you.
Get out of my office. I don't have an office. I work exclusively in house calls.
But doctor, you're in my office.
And then, like, I'm a doctor tends. He's talking to her option like, oh, I should be taking this stuff seriously, huh? Like, the way you're treating me, I get it now. Yeah.
It's really weird because the beginning of this sequence is not, like, given, like, a flashback. It's not done over voiceover, like, the talking to the measles mom. And then it, like, transitions to this voiceover. And this whole voiceover sequence is so insufferable because we talk about it every single season. But, like, the writers of this show...
The baby.
They're like, women can only want one thing or explicitly baby. Not want it. And if they don't want it, it is wrong. And that is baby.
Yeah. They're inherently satanic and either a demon will come into them or come into them.
Yeah.
One of the two.
And so, again, this is one of the mom. There's one of the moms, because the title's mommy. She's like, yeah, I never want. I'll give you a TLDR of her speech, which is, I never wanted kids. I never thought about having kids. It wasn't on my radar. I just wanted to make other kids' childhoods better by being a doctor. But then that all changed when I got pregnant and had my son, and I realized that my exclusive destiny is to be Holden's mom. And this is where I also had the truly, haunting realization, because I'm like, oh, we're just going to ignore your daughter then, I guess, who was clearly older in that flashback where he got kidnapped.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah, good point. But...
And apparently Holden is older, and I'm like, no, like, that's not even arguable. Like, no, he's not.
No, like, there's a part where the sister and Holden are interacting, and Holden's, like, still like, baby talk, and she's, like, fully elucidating things.
She has a phone, and stuff. Yeah, absolutely. You're right, though, like, because the only way this scene works, the way she's talking about, is Holden born first, you know, but, it doesn't work.
She says it, because I had typed out that whole note, and then the next thing she said as I was typing it was, oh, eventually, then I had Scarlett. I'm like, did you like keep her in extra long and bake her an extra few years? And like Holden came out first, like that one guy in One Piece, or like what's going on?
She had a progeria, so she just ages fast, you know. So
reverse Benjamin Button disease.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, like, then she goes on this, like, whole thing, which this isn't really the annoying part, but, like, it is a little heavy-handed where there's a scene of her, like, holding Holden after she gives birth to him, and, like, she's, like, sniffing his head, and she's like, oh, he smells like lavender. I promise you, he smelled like lavender. And I'm like, I don't think so.
No.
Yeah, this is really where it, like, full tilt into the like mysticism of being a mom, where it's just like, no matter what you think, no matter what you've been taught, no matter what your ambitions are, as soon as you smell a baby's head that came out of your hoo-ha, you're gonna go fucking crazy.
What's even worse?
Really gross.
Let's not even discuss the lavender thing just yet, because believe me, I will have some thoughts about it in about 5 minutes. But like, the really heavy-handed thing is lavender mention aside, because unfortunately, it will be important in 5 minutes.
It'll be relevant.
That's the problem, yeah.
That is a problem. But then the next thing, they're like, we really, really need to hammer home that every person has an addiction. And they then have her say, it verbatim, that smell was and always will be my drug of choice. And she says it like that. And I literally went, I was like, oh, we get it. Her addiction's being a mom to a boy. She's a boy mom. We get it.
This makes no sense, though. Because, like, and also later, you know, when we encounter the other mom in this who sounds more like that, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't even make sense. Like, she's addicted to being a mom to just one kid, see?
There's two people in this episode who are addicted to being a mom. It's the worst. Yeah, but they make this one actually say it out loud, and it really sucks to hear them say it out loud, because it's like, bro, we got it. You don't have to explain it. I promise.
It feels very like show don't or tell don't show in a way, you know what I mean? Because like, when we get to like Iris's stuff, like she seems like somebody who's like, you know, a bad mom because she's too doting or too much, you know, in One Direction. But like, there's nothing that like this Dr. Vax, I'm blanking on her name, is like
Alex.
It's like, Alex, you know, yeah. There's nothing like she like does particularly that we see where she's like, oh yeah, I was always with Holden and blah 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 blah. She just looks like, I really like this kid. You know, like a junkie likes heroin.
I love the way this baby smelled. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So like there's multiple really frustrating things about this sequence. The first one being that they immediately made this character the trope of, oh, I'm a career woman who doesn't really they don't even have her say she doesn't want kids. She just says, oh, I never really thought about it. That wasn't my dream. She just literally says that. And then they have her have a kid and they're like, oh, and now she's like, oh, actually, I was wrong. I am. My destiny and my dream was to become a mom, and specifically this mom. Then they add another layer by making her a boy mom, TM. Not the mother to a son, but a boy mom. And what does that mean? It means that we also get a scene right after she sniffs his little baby head where she is sleeping in the bed with Holden. And her husband is like staring sadly at them. And she's like, yeah, man, I loved my baby, my son. I cannot emphasize enough, my son baby. Way more than my shitty husband or daughter. They don't care about them at all. I only give a shit about my cool son, my cool baby son. That is my destiny. I don't actually need to be a doctor, it turns out. I just want to be Holden's mom. Scarlett's meh, whatever. I do care about Holden.
So weird.
The Scarlett really does kind of get passively shit on by proxy here, like, a lot. It's kind of wild. Like, really, it's just like, I would give up everything for Holden. I would have stopped working at the hospital. You still have a daughter. Yeah, what a shame.
Like, I've heard about, like, parents, like, having, like, a kid they, like, not prefer, but, like, it's like, I, whatever, like, one parent with one kid, all that stuff. But, like, she is outright, like, fuck Scarlett. You know what I mean? Not even, like, I, yeah, you know, I like Scarlett, but Alden and I have a special bond. It's just
later,
like,
in this episode, they will, like, say it verbally, like, straight up. John will be like, oh, I know you didn't love me or Scarlett as much as you loved Holden, and that was fine. And she's like, yeah, you're right. And I'm like, they're not even pretending that, like, this is a, oh, well, maybe you could read it that way. She straight up says it.
But, like, it's also a weird conversation. I mean, okay, the Scarlett thing, no, but we're just like, I know you love our kid more than me. We're just like, it's different, though. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, didn't they, like, ask anyone who had a kid? You know what I mean? It's not the same thing. It's like, all right, you ever, it's the thing, the expression people don't like, which is like, you never love anyone like your kid. But, like, it doesn't mean, like, more. It's like, you love, like, a pet, and you can love a pet in the way that's different from a friend you're really close to, or a sibling, or it's like, you can't compare it like that. Like, I love, like, you more than my kid. Like, no, like, you love, you know, yeah, it's different. It's weird to, like, their John even bring that up, because he should feel the same way, you know? It makes sense for, like, you love Holden and not Scarlett, which is more fucked up to Scarlett than shows the close bond between Alex and Holden. You know what I mean? Like, it's weird. Yeah. It's just a weird thing, but...
Yeah, Scarlett really gets the short end of the stick in most of this, it turns out.
And you're supposed to like Alex, I think, but she sounds terrible.
Alex,
like, in this
is
whole thing.
Insufferable. I'll say it now. Alex sucks.
Yeah, and, like, to keep moving along here, too, they decide to elevate her going from being a driven woman with dreams and goals and whatnot to just being, if my son ever gets taken away from me in a horrible carousel accident, I'll immediately kill myself. And by that, I mean, she immediately tries to kill herself. It's really gross escalation that they really didn't need to do. Like, it's one of those things that they could have just been like, and then she was very distraught that Holden was gone. And I'd be like, I believe you.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to have her slit her wrists and get in a bathtub, man. Like, come on. Like, I get it. You want to do serious imagery or have me take her seriously, but it just seems like she's, like, out of control of the time.
Like, that's the thing, is because in like maybe for like 5 or 10 seconds in that sequence, they do something, like, they start to have, like, a poignant conversation before it ends with her trying to kill herself. Of, she's like, the first day after he goes missing, or the first day after your child goes missing, when the phone rings, you think, every phone call you get, you think it's someone that found him.
Sure.
And then she's like, and then after a month, now your phone is just your phone. And then after a year, you realize that grief is never going to go away. She spends about 10 to 15 seconds talking about grief in a way that you're like, okay, well, they're actually kind of like having some tact with this, and they're going to tackle grief.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, but now she's going to kill herself. And what's really frustrating...
Yeah, like, they explicitly have her say, too, and then you realize that the next year is going to be a lot like the last year. And it's kind of this thing of, like, yeah, life goes on. Like, it's this understanding of, like, yeah, that's how the world is, you know? And then, yeah, it just cuts to her being like, well, time to put on my silk gown and get ready to cut in the tub.
Yeah. And, like, the thing about it is they literally have her put on, like, the I'm going to kill myself nightgown that, like, every character who kills themselves in a TV show puts on. And then she, like, is doing it in the bathroom, and John, I guess, gets spidey senses and is like, sounds like my wife's trying to kill herself, and wakes up and then, like, stops her, like, finds her and stops her. And as this scene, because we're just watching the flashback as she's talking over it, as this scene is happening, like, him pulling her out of the tub fully unconscious and, like, her whole arms have been cut open, she's like, I keep going every day for Scarlett. And I'm like, I guess fucking not, because you tried to kill yourself. So, like, I guess not. I guess you weren't going on for Scarlett, because the only reason you're here is because John, like, found you in time, because he has Spider-Man's spidey senses, I guess. Yeah, it's...
She left the tub running, and he just heard water hitting the tile like a random NPC in Hitman. He's just like, someone left the sink on.
Oh, no.
My fucking wife.
I'm always getting on her about this. And he goes in to yell at her, but it turns out she tried to kill herself.
You leave the sink on again, honey, I swear to God. Can you imagine living with someone who leaves the sink on, like, regularly?
And having such insane. A stopped-up sink that it always overflows. It doesn't drain fast enough, so it's always going to overflow. Yeah. Wow, just a nightmare. This house is a prison. So that's the end of the flashback. And then it cuts back to the present, where we are right now. And they are at therapy. And it's funny that Slowbeef earlier mentioned that, like, oh, this would make more sense if this was grief counseling, because sometimes I get ahead of myself in the notes and then I have to, they answer the question I put in my note like 2 seconds later. And when I typed out this note, like, originally, I typed it out, the family is at, or Alex is at grief counseling. And then I had to back it up and be like, oh no, they're at therapy, I guess, because it's framed like she is at like a group therapy session, and then it pans out and you see Scarlett and John on the other couch, and you're like, oh, okay, I guess this was actually therapy, family therapy that they went to because Scarlett is lying about Holden existing, which is not... That's also very frustrating. So at the therapy session, the therapist is like, hey, Alex, you haven't really shared a lot, which means all of the stuff that just happened never actually got said out loud to the therapist, which feels like it should have been definitely addressed, maybe in a one-on-one with the therapist, maybe not at family therapy, but definitely addressed. And then Alex just straight looks at Scarlett and is like, I feel like you're lying about your brother to hurt us. And I'm like, even if she was lying, even if that like literally is what she's doing, and she's just like making up stories about seeing her dead brother as now alive, I don't think that this 7 to 9 year old girl is like doing it on purpose to like specifically spite you. It sounds more likely, and they don't say this, but it sounds more likely that, hey, maybe that 7 to 9 year old girl also is deeply, deeply traumatized by her brother dying, and I don't know, would maybe want to, like, I don't know, deal with that in a way a child would, by like having an active imagination or something. It does not seem like this would be a malicious act on the part of the child, is what I'm trying to get across. But for some reason, Alex thinks this is a targeted attack by her evil, awful daughter, just specifically to cause her more pain for
why
something.
Does my child love causing me grief?
Yeah. If you're enjoying this podcast and are interested in supporting us or having access to additional bonus episodes, consider subscribing to our Patreon over at patreon.com/greatandterribleahs. Supporters who pledge $5 or more a month will get access to our monthly Patreon exclusive episode, in which we discuss various American Horror Story spinoffs, such as American Horror Stories. Thank you again for listening, and we hope to see you around next week.
Yeah, so the child, it's important to know that a baby can't be malicious, right? And I feel like this is one step removed from a baby can't be malicious. Like, a teen can be, except Scarlett's not a teen because Holden's supposed to be 8 and Scarlett's supposed to be younger than Holden, right? So she's like 6.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think some years, not many, but I think some years have passed. I think at this point, Scarlett, who allegedly was like 3, I guess, in when he got captured, that's being very generous, because again, she's walking around and is taller than him, and he is maybe 2 in the flashback. She's maybe 7, maybe 9, who knows? It seems like maybe 3 to 5 years have passed. They don't say exactly. But it's been some years. But yeah, when like accosted by her mother, the therapist is like, yeah, I don't think your kid is like trying to hurt you. That's a really weird thing to think. and then Scarlett's like, yeah, no, it's none of the things any of you have said that it probably is. It's that my brother actually is a vampire and he lives in a room where they eat jelly beans and play Nintendo. And I'm like, well, they don't play Nintendo, and those aren't jelly beans. So you are wrong about several things, but I get it. You got the spirit. You're like close.
Mm-hmm.
But she's right about the vampire thing. And then this is where the lavender thing becomes important again. She's like she being Scarlet is talking to Alex now and explaining that she's not like lying to hurt her or whatever. And then she's like, and when I first found him, he sleeps in a glass coffin at the bottom of a swimming pool. And the first time, and then Alex is like, well, okay, well, if you saw him, if he was there in the swimming pool or whatever, does he talk about us? Is he like, what does he say? In kind of an antagonistic way. And then Scarlet's like, well, the first time I saw him, like, he's different. He looks different and he smells like lavender. And Linnet plays a musical sting. How does and then she's like, it smells like lavender, like the candles we have at home. And I'm like,
yeah,
as a Fabuloso enjoyer, not all lavender things smell the same. Turns out fake lavender has like a lot of different smells.
Yeah.
Also, that kid doesn't smell like lavender. And if he did, I don't think him becoming a vampire would keep that, because like that feels like something that you would smell like when you were alive. Not when you're a vampire. I imagine vampires don't smell of much because they don't like do bodily functions, yeah. I don't think.
And like people do have like a little bit of a natural smell, right? Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of a thing that happens, and it can change depending on what people are eating. This is like a known studyable quantity. There are some spices that are very obvious if someone ate them the next day. And the idea of someone just passively smelling like lavender is just insane.
That's like that.
Unless they're like rolling around in some like dryer sheets every night.
I don't remember what it was called, but there was a really famous post that went around on Tumblr like 10 years ago or something. Where like there was this like this girl claimed to have this rare disorder where she had purple eyes and white hair and never had a period, and it was called like the Andromeda syndrome or something like that. and people will sometimes like refer to that as a bit. They'll be like, I have purple eyes and white hair and I don't get periods.
So funny. I've
like
heard that.
Like that's the same vibes as like, yeah, my baby smells like lavender, he just naturally always smells like lavender. Like, no, he didn't, dude. Like, what are you talking
about?
He can
see the future a little bit.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the vibes I get off of it. But it plays the sting, so you know that now Alex knows that Scarlet isn't lying, because she always said that he smelled like lavender. And given how fucking annoying Alex has been about this whole thing, I reckon that the most realistic version of this is that I reckon that Alex probably tells people all the time and did from the time he was a baby. Oh, my baby smells like lavender. My baby smells like lavender. That's why I'm always sniffing him. So Scarlet probably heard her say, Holden smells like lavender at some point.
And you smell and like then, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're stinky. You're my stinky daughter who I don't love as much. It's not my destiny to be your mom. You take after your dad, who I hate for some reason. Yeah,
he does
so now
suck.
We know.
Because he lost my good stinky baby.
Yeah.
He lost the good stink.
You lost my Fabuloso scented baby. Yeah, when the sting played and on lavender, the delivery of lavender, because like to her, there's not many good child actors, but the little girl who's playing Scarlet is not doing a super great job in this scene. But she's a kid actor and she's doing kid acting. And so when she's like, he smelled like lavender, like she delivers it like she knows it's a plot twist, which is a thing that adults know not to do usually.
Yeah.
The other thing that I noticed, just kind of a funny aside, is most of, like, that scene is delivered via ADR. We're only looking at the back of Scarlet's head. And you can tell that, like, they forgot to tell the little girl who was playing Scarlet that, like, oh, we're dubbing over this part. So, like, you don't have to, like, look like you're talking. It's just going to be the back of your head, because she's doing so much, like, animated head movement as she's saying the line, and none of it matches like what she's saying, so it just looks like she's like head bobbing, like head banging while she's talking. I thought it was a little funny that they were like, yeah, this kid's a kid actor and we don't care. We're just gonna let it rip. Who cares
Well, it's time for one more person to get yoinked into a bed. I insist that we get one more bed yoinking, because this one's like the most nonsense of all of them, I think, so far. Claudia, who is the fashionista, who was like here at the show doing something, it's unclear, was talking on the phone while sitting in a room. The call cuts out and she just goes to wash her face. She like looks over onto like a mirror table next to where she's sitting and sees the drildo demon being like, ah, and she's just like, ah, and then she's like, okay, well, go time to go to bed, I guess.
Yeah, imagine imagine you like turn, you're in an unfamiliar place and you see the reflection of like the drildo demon and you're like, huh, that was weird. I guess I just suddenly developed hallucinations, vivid hallucinations. Anyway.
Yeah.
Time to go to bed.
And then, yeah, just goes to bed again. And this is bugging me too. Like, I was like, so she sits right in the middle of the bed and there's no stitches there. How would she not feel the gigantic stitches that are like ropes? Well, whatever. And then fucking Gabriel, the guy who was here with hypodermic Sally earlier, just like pops out of the mattress and is like, it's killing time, which it's really unclear why or how or to what end or any of this.
Yeah, like also like that implies that he's been alive in the mattress. And like, first of all, that means he didn't like die, even though we watched him die. That he's just been alive and in the mattress and like hasn't called for help. And when he heard her talking on the phone, did not notice that this was a person he didn't know. Not to like spoil it, but like he thinks she's somebody else, which is weird given that this lady is played by Naomi Campbell, who has a pretty noticeable accent and like speaks a very specific way that isn't like the person he thinks that she is.
And frame, like she is like a very slight frame compared to most people,
right?
Relatively speaking.
Also, why would the person he thinks that it is lay on the mattress that he's in? Question mark. Just to begin with. So like he just like he pops out and he first of all, he kills her by stabbing her with scissors. Where did you get scissors? Because if they weren't in the mattress with you, which I reckon they weren't, given that you didn't cut yourself out of the mattress, where did you get them? Most hotel rooms don't come with scissors. So where did you get scissors? And
it's like cool though. From the, looks cool.
From the black nightstand. And the other thing that James March made, there's just one pair of scissors in the drawer, and that's it. But it's black.
No Bibles, though.
Oh,
he hates
welcome
those.
To my spooky mattress. It's filled with knives.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing. It's like he can't have had it in the mattress, or else he would have just cut himself out of the mattress. Also, if he was alive in there this whole time, you can claw yourself out of a mattress, I think. Like, if you're dead, you obviously can't, but, like, if you're alive,
also,
you
can
crawl
like,
out.
Also, you can, feel a man. If you lie down on top of a man, you can feel it. It's not, like, hard to notice there's a man under you instead of a mattress. You'd lie down and be like, that's flat.
Firm mattress.
I should probably call room service. Like,
yeah, I'm going to need someone to turn this shit down for sure. Yeah, no toys about it. Yeah, so just like the hands reach through the mattress, grab her through the throat, and pull her down into the you died dimension. It like hard cuts to a crime scene, which I think we should burn through the crime scene real quick because it doesn't seem terribly relevant to the rest of the episode.
No, it's just we had to check off another Ten Commandments. It's Ten Commandments killing time. This is a new one. And the detectives, Andy and John, are at the crime scene, which is like a WeWork situation, like an office, a big shared office where a bunch of like gossip magazine reporters, air quotes, have been murdered, have been shot at their desk. And the other detective is like, oh, this might be another Charlie Hebdo situation. And I did the jerk off motion with my hand just now, which means that the writers of the show wanted to make a reference to be like, see, we know about real stuff that happens. Mm-hmm. And then they make a weird passing thing. So when they come in, all of the screens that everyone's working on is a weird like hit piece about Obama having a secret love child. And Andy, the other detective, is like, oh, they were writing about Obama. I'm looking into Islamic terrorist groups in the area. And I'm like,
what?
What? Why would an Islamic terrorist group kill a gossip magazine team for writing a gossip like piece about Barack Obama?
And then John's like, no, that's stupid. And they're like, that's why you're the best detective. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, this is why you get paid the big bucks,
damn,
John.
This guy's good. Yeah.
Yeah, and so John has the same thought I just did and is like, this is a gossip magazine. And then they like walk through the office and they see that every person has their tongue like nailed to their desk. He'd be so shit out of luck if he tried to do that to me. My tongue is not long enough to nail to a desk. But he somehow did it. The killer did it to like literally everybody. And by that, I mean 10 or more people are in this office with their tongues nailed to their desk. And I know you're probably thinking, well, Liz, the killer probably nailed their tongue to the desk. And then shot them in the head. No, they do themselves a disservice by showing us like an imaginary situation in which the killer shot them in the head after he nailed their tongues to the desk, which means that whoever did this somehow got 10 people to sit still at their desk and nail their tongues to the desk. And then get shot in the head with none of them standing up or trying to leave. In fact, we see in the like the fake like flashback, because we see a guy on the floor too, and like he's doing his detective thing, his like Sherlock Holmes thing, where he's like, I see between the lines, I see exactly what happened. he sees the guy on the ground and his tongue still nailed to the desk, and he's like, oh, that guy tried to run away after his tongue got nailed to the desk. And I'm like, he's the only one, huh? He's the only guy who tried to leave after his tongue got nailed to
and
the desk.
None of them thought to try running before their tongue was nailed to the guy was like nailing it, and he was like, hey, I'm holding the hammer right now. I'll hit you with this. You stay right there.
Yeah, I don't have the gun in my hand that I'm shooting people with right now, because I need it for the hammer and the nail.
The hammer.
Yeah, and the nail. Yeah. Unless the implication is he was getting each one of the people to hold the nail for him so he could hold the gun up to hold everybody at gunpoint while he's doing the hammer.
Well, now is he like fucking Obi-Wan Kenobi? How's he doing this shit? Like,
10 people he gets to sit there and nail their tongue to the desk before shooting them in the head. And nobody besides one guy who did it after his tongue was nailed to the desk thought to get up. That's not even the dumbest part of this. The dumbest part of this is that John, being Sherlock Holmes, looks at the tongue nailed to the desk and goes, they had wagging tongues. He put a stop to that. And then that's the end of that scene. And then he's going back to his hotel room, and he gets into the hotel, and as he does, he's on the phone with who I can only describe as his assistant, because he's always giving this lady busy work. He's like, I need you to check on the previous murders, because I think we missed a commandment, because this one is thou shall not, I don't know, like,
false
talk.
Witness.
Yeah, false witness.
Yeah. Bare false witness. This is bare false witness, definitely.
And then as he's doing that, this will be the fun little cliffhanger that we'll leave off on, because we still have half an episode left. As he's saying this, he gets run into by Gabriel, who is covered in blood and is begging for help. That's bum bum bum.
And I think this is where he explicitly says, like, I didn't want to kill her. And that's what really makes him go, like, I better pay attention to this. I think.
Yeah. So we're also supposed to remember that he thinks they've missed a murder, like, because he thinks a commandment's missing, which implies that this dude is going in order of commandments, I guess. They expect you to know that.
I don't think so. No, I don't think they are in order. Because I think if they were in order, I'm pretty sure someone would have already been killed for, like, jacking off on a Sunday or something. Like, someone already has definitely fucked up the Sabbath. And that's, like, the third one.
Yeah. Well, the first three are all the God ones, right? And then, like, you get into...
don't use the Lord's name in vain is, like, top three, four, sure.
Yeah, that's two. Okay, first one is you have no other gods before me. And then the adultery one, I think, is, like, 7 or 8. I went to Catholic school. Yeah, but,
okay,
well,
so
what you're telling
me is there's no reason that John should think that they've missed a commandment.
Right.
Okay.
No, yeah, no.
Just a hunch?
There's no. No, unless there were nine, and he was like, I think he's done, actually. Then maybe, but otherwise, yeah.
Right.
Like, it's just like, yeah, a wild guess that there's some kind of order that he's
Because we're only
found,
up to,
yeah.
what, three? This is only like, or four, I guess, technically. Those two twins got murdered. I don't remember what their one was. Something about, I don't know. I really don't remember what the two twins.
Thou shalt not go on Hot Girl Summer.
Yeah. I don't remember what theirs was, but they did theirs last episode. And then there was the guy who got glued into the vagina.
That was the adultery, yeah.
And then maybe False Idols was the guy who got bludgeoned with the golden trophy, who we've
I think
only
so,
seen
yeah.
the trophy of.
Yeah.
So we only know about like four in theory.
Yeah.
Do you think he's counting? Do you think that John's just really stupid and he's counting James
yes.
March's killings?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Also, yes. I agree with Slow Beef's yes, and then also the additional yes for the end of the statement. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think that this like world-class detective is like, oh, well, the original Ten Commandments killer who isn't actually that, I just decided he was.
I think he explicitly said to one of the other officers, right, back at the police station, when like she was like, hey, I have a report for you, and he goes, I think this guy's picking up James March's old Ten Commandments killing. You hear about this? And the other cops like, what?
Yeah, which is wild, because James March only kills one person in relevance to the Bible, and like it was just like a throwaway thing of like, yeah, I wanted to say, fuck the Bible, and I don't believe in religion, so I killed a bunch of people working on Sunday, and I put a bunch of Bibles around them, because you shouldn't work on the Sabbath. That was, like, the extent of it. It was James March being, like, an annoying atheist. not really being like, now I'm a fiend killer.
No, not the Pastafarian killings. It's over.
Well, we have another.
Yeah,
half of an
so
episode.
That's about. Yeah, that's roughly half of Mommy. Look forward to next time when we get to talk about the other Mommy, which is, you know, at least it's Kathy Bates.
Yeah,
if nothing
all right.
else. You know,
that's true.
It is probably my least favorite Kathy Bates character in all of American Horror Story so far. I think she's quite bad, but it's still Kathy Bates. So yeah, look forward to that. Look forward to that. And also Sally just weirdly being horny on everyone and everyone being like, yeah, I'm receptive to this.
Yeah, I think this is good. I like this. I like this Lot Lizard vibe we have going on.
Yeah, yeah, it's cool. Like, I was just like I was a family man or whatever, but you've got a great point. Lick my face. Till next time, everybody. Have a great evening.
Bye.
Bye.